The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
Welcome to the One Fall Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Johnson, and we're joined by Mo, and honestly...
No.
Oh, no.
The Futurist. The Futurist. I've earned it.
This is the second year where you've picked the G1 Finals correctly, right?
Yeah, the correct winner and people.
You won... You beat me by a couple points. I was second. Josh was last.
As we knew it would happen eventually.
Yeah. It was bound to happen. The Futurist. Yes, Mo won 2 years in a row. 2 years in a row.
Don't worry about it. I mean, 2 years in a row, 10 years in a row. What's it going to matter?
It's just going to keep going on. In all seriousness, this is the first G1 that I've watched completely in full from night one all the way to night 19. And then the finals is night 20, correct?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
So I watched 20 nights of Japanese pro wrestling. I just got to say, I think the best moment out of this whole wrestling weekend, because there was a lot of weekend... Didn't come from NXT, didn't come from WWE, did not even come from that G1 Finals. It came from that heel turn and that moment. I had goosebumps watching that moment. And if you don't know what I'm talking about Shibata coming out and dropping Kenta and then dropping the Tongans and booting Fale. That was quite a moment. I think that is the moment that I take away from this weekend is Shibata.
Are you kidding me? When Kenta did Shibata's pose on his chest, I was like, dude, I was just like, oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I loved, Double or Nothing. Like, I loved it, but it's going to be pretty much impossible to top that show for show of the year. Like it's there's nothing that it didn't have from an incredible angle, incredible heat, incredible wrestling, emotion, just incredible. And I guess I should say I think this is my fifth or maybe sixth G1 I've watched. That is an advantage for me, having seen it, and you, because it's all part of a long. It's not just a 1 year storyline. It's a long term. This is New Japan Pro Wrestling storyline.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like this, and that is the one thing, because you hear callbacks. You hear them talking about Sonata not beating Okada. You hear other little storylines that have been ingrained in New Japan, and they keep going, and they keep it going more or less without fail. Like, it's always has that fluidity to it. And you think about it now, because I remember seeing the night before where Tama said they got a world-class athlete to join Bullet Club. And then you see Kenta standing outside the ring and Ishii suplexing Fale, which in itself is like, holy crap, that's amazing. And then you see Kenta turn, and it just clicks because of Kenta's time in Noah, as well as Kenta's time in WWE, being around Finn Balor in NXT, improving his English, and being more entrenched in the North American style of pro wrestling. There's just no way that Japanese crowd was going to fully embrace Kenta. And for him to be now potentially one of the big players for Bullet Club is massive, and it's a stroke of genius, and it just gives you a storyline moving forward with Kenta.
Well, it's so great, and the thing about it I'm sure he'll beat Ishii for the never open weight title, I would imagine. You know, which sucks for Tai Chi, but hey, you know, it is what it is. I'm sure he's going to beat him here at the Royal Quest, yeah, that's it. So I'm sure he'll win it. And then it's like, who gets revenge for Shibata? We're probably not going to see Shibata wrestle. I think that's pretty much well known at this point, which is too bad because you certainly wanted to see it after that moment. But who gets revenge for him? Will it be Goto? Will it be Ibushi? Will it be somebody else? And that's the other thing is, now that he's a part of Bullet Club, and Ibushi, he beat him, and Ibushi's looks like he's on a trajectory to get the belt at Wrestle Kingdom. Like, there's just so much going forward for this guy. It's so good. It's just such great. It's, again, great storytelling. Everything has a purpose. Everything, every time. Just love it.
By and large, I think it is the best thing in pro wrestling. I know you said it's the best thing in sports, but this is solidified. Like, Japan, to me, has solidified.
The G1 is the best thing in sports. And yes, and in pro wrestling.
I think this is yet again solidified New Japan as the wrestling, the top wrestling company in the world. NXT is great and good, and I love NXT, but Japan is just constantly seems to find a way to shift gears forward. They've had a little bit of a flub there, especially when Jay was the champion. Felt like that kind of cooled them off, and especially with the Elite exiting and everything that came with that. But now you're not even thinking about the Elite. You're not thinking, oh man, it sucks that Kenny and them are all gone. You're just thinking, hey, I can't wait to see Suzuki and Okada again. Suzuki pinned Okada. Suzuki wasn't in the G1, and that was a big question mark for a lot of people. And now you saw why, because he got a big win on the final night of the G1, and now he's going to go after Okada, which those two always seem to feud at least once a year, and I'm perfectly okay watching those two go at it and just having Suzuki terrorize Okada for a match.
The thing is, nobody's perfect, but you should... It's like at the end of the day, we should always just sit back, relax, and say, you know what? Gato has a plan.
Yeah.
Gato has a plan. You're like, I don't understand what Gato has a plan. But why did Gato has a plan? Like, that's it. It's, you know, because he always does.
He always seems to find a way to have things set up. And he has, this is the beauty of long-term booking. This is absolutely the beauty of having a year-long plan and having it way in advance. You know, you have to make adjustments. I'd heard rumors that after the Shibata-Okada match, apparently there was supposed to be another matchup between these two, and Shibata was supposed to beat Okada. But Shibata can't wrestle anymore, so that obviously changed things. And you just saw how Gato adapt, if this is true, and able to keep things flowing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he can definitely adapt. I mean, he adapted, like I said. I mean, it was going to be Omega and Tanahashi, and, you know, Omega was going to hold on to the belt at Wrestle Kingdom, right? Like, you can definitely adapt. Okay, that didn't happen. Okay, we put it on Tanahashi, and then we put it on Jay White. All right, that didn't quite get the momentum we want. We take it off Jay White. We build Jay White in a different way. Jay White's stronger now than he was when he won the belt, than when he was champion. Like, he's, you know, far more respected because of what happened in this G1. Like all of it is just, it's just so flawless. Like, it really is flawless storytelling.
Oh, yeah.
And it's everything. It to me, the G1, this proves why, look, when sports entertainment is done really, really well, it's really entertaining.
Yep.
But this proves to me why it is that pro wrestling is superior to sports entertainment. When they're both done really, really well, pro wrestling will be better. And when they're both done poorly, both will suck. But yep. If they're both done, yeah, but if you're like WWE right now, where it's done very average and this is done incredible, it's not even close. So, I mean, just by its nature, pro wrestling is better and more entertaining. It generates a far greater true emotion than and connects at a deeper level than sports entertainment does.
I can't tell you the last time wrestling gave me goosebumps, but when Shibata came out and started clubbing Kenta and throwing the boots and all that was happening, I had goosebumps. I think the last time I had those goosebumps is when Brian had returned and started kicking KO and Sammy around. And the first time you saw Brian physical after this long hiatus and every of the storyline tied in with Brian and everything that happened with that. But when Shibata ran down, it was goosebumps, because you're like, oh my god, I can't believe, like, when he starts throwing punches, you're sitting there and you're just, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing what they were able to do with that just one single moment. And it just added that level to that heel turn. And like you said, when you sit there and you see Kenta sitting and doing the Shibata pose on Shibata and Bullet Club doing the two sweet, it's like, this is perfect.
It added a new element to it.
Well, the podcast has dipped in quality, so.
Yeah. Well, this is my first podcast in a week with my voice being somewhat regenerated, so... Hello to everyone. Josh Adam William Arbuth not here. Joe Mo, sounds like you guys are having a great conversation. So after my introduction of myself, you guys continue your great work.
Josh, since you've joined us, what did you think of the Shibata moment?
I got to see it early in the morning via social media, and I really like it. I think to a degree, the Bullet Club, as far as the mainstream sense of things, has kind of lacked a little bit of coolness. And, you know, the Gorillas of Destiny, I think, are really cool. And, you know, I know Mo's higher on Jay White than the two of us, and I really like Jay White. But I think they need a little bit of buzz. They needed an injection of something. And I think adding someone like Kenta is a huge injection to that Bullet Club brand. In fact, I wore my Bullet Club shirt today just because I was excited about a guy like Kenta being part of the Bullet Club. I think it adds an extra layer that they've been looking for with the Bullet Club. It kind of just seems like the Bullet Club... You know, if you ask some people, they would think the Bullet Club is dead because the Elite are no longer in New Japan. And I think some people just assume that the Bullet Club ended when Kenny and the Bucks all left. And that's not the case at all. The Bullet Club is still there. Jay White was the champion this year. The Gorillas of Destinies have had a good year. Bad Luck Fale still with them. But adding someone like Kenta adds an extra injection to the Bullet Club to maybe revitalize the brand.
I think you're right. It definitely helps to revitalize it. That combined with the continued evolution of the Jay White Switchblade character, mm-hmm. and him becoming a bigger star, you know, getting to the G1 finals, having the terrific match as the heel, the psychology, the heel heat psychology that he used of a totally different style of match. You know, so him starting to look like he deserves to be the leader, and then you add in a guy like Kenta who true, genuine heat. Such a rare thing to see anymore. You know, people wanted to jump the rails and beat the hell out of him. You just don't see that anymore. And yeah, so I mean, this is all, it was just another great moment from, you know, and it was so perfectly done. The last time I was probably that like amazed and shocked was when Shibata showed up at the Wrestle Kingdom, not this last one, but the year before. And said, "I am alive," and then left. And like,
was that not
that was such a surprise?
Was that not the G1 final last year?
Or maybe it was.
I think it was the G1. I think you're right.
You're right. It was G1. You're right. It was G1. So that's so perfect.
That because everyone was leaving for intermission, and then his music hit, and it was reported that the minute his music hit, people flooded back to their seats because no one had any clear directive on Shibata's health. And then when he came out, he took that bump, smiled, said, "I'm alive, that is all." The whole crowd was going bananas. It was just one of those surreal moments, because this is a guy that had garnered, he was on a massive rise in New Japan, especially after that Okada match. That match was amazing. It's you still watch it and you see that headbutt and you think about the damage that was done, but that match is still incredible. And it's just...
It'd be the best match I've seen of the decade, maybe, if it wasn't for that that ruined his career. Like, it was such a good moment. But the thing is like, that type of emotion, that's why we watch.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
It's for that moment, you know?
Absolutely. And it's up there when you'd hear in the 90s where you'd hear Austin's music and he'd come out and the whole crowd is just all jumping up and down and going crazy for this bald-headed guy coming out with a steel chair and whacking Patterson and Briscoe and going after Vince, and JR's losing his mind on commentary, and you're just so enthralled in this world. It's just like WrestleMania 30 when Bryan won the title, and you just have the confetti and the crowds just loving every minute of it. It's moments like that that make wrestling worthwhile.
Yeah, and the thing is that it's not something you necessarily, like, it's rare, right? Which is what makes it special.
Yeah.
Like, you can see with Roman Reigns, you can't just manufacture those moments.
Nope.
You can't. It needs a lot of factors coming together, but when it's right, it's like the best thing. It's the best thing for entertainment wise. It's the best thing I can pretty much watch.
I go back to the moment with Kenny and Ibushi last year, where Kenny's getting beaten down by Cody, and the Bullet Club / Elite is turned on Kenny, and out comes Ibushi with the chair. And you can see that Kenny's like, no, I don't want to hug you. This whole thing is screwed. And that hug and that embrace from those two, and just the emotion from that moment, is little things that Japan has been able to capitalize on and not exploit to the point of, like, I'm sick of seeing this. But it's like, this is great. This is a moment that is worthwhile and helps further storylines along. And speaking of Ibushi, he had a match. And he faced Jay White in the final. We've talked so much about Shibata, we should talk about the G1 final. Ibushi won his block, second year in a row that he has won a block and gone on to the finals. This is Jay White's first victory heading into the finals for the G1. And it was the battle of the Golden Star versus this meteoric rise of this guy that I don't think a lot of people thought would be where he is. Myself included, I didn't think he'd be where he is. I remember when he got the Switchblade gimmick, and I was just kind of like, meh, okay, cool. This is great. This is nice and all. And now, you going into that, like, you heard reports that when Jay beat Naito heading into the final night for Block B, that the crowd was so upset that it just left. It left the arena. There was no lingering. There were people that were furious with that finale. And you heard that in the crowd, how much support Ibushi had and how much heat that Jay White had. What'd you guys think of the match?
Go ahead, Josh.
I haven't had an opportunity to see it yet.
Oh, yeah. I haven't. Oh, that's too bad. It's a great match. Again, because it's about that selling, right? It's about the fact that you're near the end. This Jay White's getting this, you know, he's getting the hell beat out of him, but the heat is just right. Like, it's just perfect. And then, you know, and the crowd, like, he does little things that just make the crowd just hate him all the more. Just little things like dropping down and dead weighting the guy, and just things that you don't see. And then it's also Ibushi selling, yeah, looking so exhausted, looking like he look, not just the ankle, just the face, just that look in his face that said, you know what it's like, Muhammad Ali versus Joe Frazier, the Thriller in Manila. And after 14 rounds, these guys in this incredible heat, literally almost killing each other, and Joe Frazier wanting to get off his stool, and his corner wouldn't let him. He wanted to go out there to fight. And then you find out afterwards, Muhammad Ali was about to quit. If Joe Frazier had come out, Muhammad Ali would have quit. Because it was literally to the point where they probably couldn't survive another round. It was literally a chance that one of them would have died if they had fought one more round. It was such a hellacious battle in this heat. And it felt like that. Like, that's how Ibushi felt. Like, if I don't win this right now, I'm dead. Yeah. I have to win it right now. I have nothing left. It's all there. And so it was when he wins, it's the explosion and the release also that it's over. And it's just all of it. It's so built up so well. It's even the night before when he beats Okada and is incredible. And Okada's beat, they're both moving so slow at the end of the match, right? And then when Okada loses, on the way back, he literally just falls face fat down and just collapses, like just flat on his face in the aisle. Like, he took such a beating that he can't even walk to the back. That's the stuff that makes you invested and makes it great. So it's, oof, man, this was everything. This is everything I ever needed from wrestling.
Is now looking back at the tournament as a whole, and Ibushi getting that win, and there's something on Ibushi that I want to get to, but first I want to look at this whole tournament. What did you think of this whole tournament? You've said this is your fifth or your sixth G1.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I'm not even sure. I'd have to look.
Where do you rank this among all those G1s that you've seen?
I mean, I can't. I don't think I can rank it. Like, they're all great. Like, every time you watch them, you're going, it can't be this great. You'd have to watch them back to back to back, you know, to maybe decide. And Lord knows it'd be worth doing. But, all I can say is it's great. If I was to say, I probably think last year's was even better.
Yeah.
Like, last year's was, you know, unbelievable. But it's what is this? So that's a 10, and this is a 10. And then you're making me pick which 10 I like more.
Yeah, I was gonna try, but I got lucky enough to be able to watch all of this and a good chunk of this live. I got to see the final night for Block A and B live. I was not a happy camp. I knew the minute that bell rung that Jay was winning. I was like, Jay White is winning. There's no possible way that Naito's winning. Jay's got this, and Mo's gonna win. Cause I had the little spreadsheet and I was doing the math, and it's like, there's no way. Mo's got this. Jay's gonna get the win. But there were still points within that final night that I'm like, maybe he hits a Destino and it's gonna be all good, and I'll look like a genius. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. But just getting to watch some of these matches live, like Goto versus Shingo, that lariat that Shingo does to Goto is just incredible. The way the sweat flew in the air from that hit and just the sound, it was just, I am going to have to take a little wrestling break, cause especially after this weekend, because I'm all wrestled out, and especially with the quality from these 20 nights from the G1. There was a lot of things that I liked about this. I've become a much bigger fan of Shingo. You don't know a whole lot about this guy. Like, I didn't know a whole lot. And then you just go down a rabbit hole wanting to know more. Ishii's just amazing. He's just that level of consistency. This has revitalized Moxley's career in a lot of ways. I know he had that hot start with AEW, but I feel like this G1 run has put him onto that next level and really given AEW an almost even bigger star than what they had originally. Yano is entertaining as hell. Shooter is now a young boy that people know. Moxley has helped elevate a young boy to more predominant position, and he gave him his Death Rider jacket, so that's pretty cool. Okada's Okada, like, he's incredible. The last 10 minutes of an Okada match is some of the best wrestling I've ever seen. Ibushi's amazing. Naito is great. Will Ospreay is still my wrestler of the year. He just has competed at such a high level. I don't know if he's going to ever be able to replicate a year like this, but he's just it's just been a home run. Anytime the guys at Grapple that have the app that does all the star ratings for people that they can rate, they gave numbers for the top competitors. Like, they broke down averages and who did the best in the top ranked matches. I'm just gonna pull that up here. The top five matches are. Number five is Ibushi and Ospreay. Number four is Naito and Shingo. Number three is Okada and Ospreay. Number two is Ishii and Shingo. And number one, because of where it was, assuming when these numbers were averaged, was Ibushi and Jay White. I don't necessarily agree with Ibushi and Jay White where that is. I more enjoyed Ishii and Shingo and Okada and Ospreay. But you see Ospreay's name pop up twice there. And you just see... Like, Ishii had an average user rating of 4.2 star matches. Okada and Ospreay had a 4.05, and then Shingo had a 3.95 average. I really like the numbers. It's always fun to look at, especially based on people's opinion. Can't take it as gospel, but it's just this. I love this because of how much of a sports feel it had and continues to have. I've gone on way longer than I anticipated, but I love the G1. It's my favorite thing.
Best thing in sports. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Best thing in sports. Well, yeah, I mean, we've analyzed it pretty good there. I mean, I agree. It's like you want to take a wrestling break, but then I see the Royal Quest card and I go, oh, damn it. No way I can't watch this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's the problem. I'm almost like, I want to take a break. They're not letting me. They said they're just going to put out something great again.
And we've got the Super J Cup. Super J Cup. And one of the first matches is Will Ospreay versus Amazing Red, which in all likelihood will be Amazing Red's last match. I don't know anything on the guy.
Really?
Not a thing.
Oh, wow.
So if you want to throw some education my way, please do.
Amazing Red's this he idolized Rey Mysterio Jr. And he was pretty much early on people really discovered him was ROH versus Loki. They do this, you remember the match that Ricochet and Ospreay had? Think of that match 15 years earlier. That's what they did.
Ooh.
That's where it's that match 15 years before those guys did that match. Everybody thinks that match is so groundbreaking. In truth, that match had already happened. And it was Loki versus Amazing Red in ROH. And just remarkable stuff. And that's where people kind of and combination of other commitments and injuries and opportunities and things. He never really got the career that he should have. But to pretty much everybody, like an Ospreay, like I say, he where we talk about how he had that match before Ospreay, it's like his influence is kind of this underground influence is massive that he has. So
I remember, sorry Mo, I just remember him early TNA. He was one of the first guys there. I think he was Suicide at one point, and
that was TJP.
Right, I thought at one point maybe he like donned the mask. I know he at least had a feud against Suicide.
He might have. He did wrestle under a mask while still wrestling as Amazing Red. Not as Suicide, but he did wrestle as under a mask. So it's possible he donned that there too.
Right, and one nugget I was going to say for Joel that I do know about him. I don't know if you do. He his cousin is currently in the WWE right now. Zelina Vega.
Oh wow.
No idea. I did not know that.
Yeah, I was saving a little nugget for the podcast.
Those two could not look less like cousins.
Yeah. But he stepped up to me when I remember watching the early TNA pay-per-views. And, you know, he had a tag team match. Well, he had stuff against Jerry Lynn, I think, early on, against AJ early on, when TNA was first starting and having those X Division matches early on and really setting themselves different than anybody else was. He was kind of one of the original leaders of the X Division, along with Daniels, AJ, Elise Skipper, those kind of names.
Oh, so this is a big deal.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like I say, he's been a very influential guy, and he's trained a lot of guys too. I can't off the top of my head think of who, but he ended up becoming a fairly successful trainer. So
I think Sasha was one of them.
I think so. Yeah, that actually sounds right. Yeah, a few people like that. Definitely some people who've you know, a significant contribution as a trainer, which I'm sure he's going to continue to have. So it'll be fun. Will he win? No. I think it'll be a great match. It'll be an extremely emotional match.
He's one of those guys, the TNA, that really slipped through the cracks that I thought would be a bigger deal somewhere else. But it just, like I told Joel beforehand, it just wasn't his time. WWE wasn't looking for those guys. And it never really got to the next level in ROH. I think it's kind of like, I thought Kenny King would be to a bigger level. But the one guy that, and I'm interested in your thoughts, Mo, that I always thought was really had a nice run in TNA, and I thought would have a bigger run at this point by now, at least somewhere, like even if it was like in a somewhere of a classic, was Doug Williams. I'm surprised Doug Williams never became more, because he had a run in TNA for a second where I thought Doug Williams was really going to be somebody.
Yeah, he was too old by the time he really got the chance over here. He was already too old. It's really his problem. Really good performer, and you see, especially now, you see that British style,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how much just guys like Pete Dunne and you know, ZSJ. They keep calling him ZSJ on New Japan World and drives me crazy, ZSJ. You know, those type of guys with that British style, and it's become a whole thing. And he was doing it first, but yeah, unfortunately, he was just too old by the time he got here to you know, get the opportunity that he deserved.
Yeah, it's too bad. It's Amazing Red, I think, is more of that. That guy, everyone always wanted him to be one of the guys, and I know when he retired, it devastated a lot of people because he's someone that a lot of people really thought would have a bigger career, and it just never, like you said, he had stuff in ROH, he had stuff in Impact, but never really got to get to the next level. And he's only 37 years old, so it's not ruling anything out. So having this match against Ospreay,
yeah, like I say, he's had a lot of injuries, so he has a small frame,
uh-huh.
and a hellacious style, so I mean that hurt him. But yeah, no, it's gonna be a great moment. He's one of those guys that, like a Jerry Lynn, you know, has a bigger influence than people realize.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk about him, you know who the guy that I always thought I couldn't believe didn't become the massive star? He was just an incredible wrestler. The guy I always thought was amazing was Too Cold Scorpio.
Right, yeah, and me too.
I always thought that guy should have been, like, I'm like, he could do everything. He could
wrestle. He had the charisma. Like,
charisma, amazing wrestler, amazing athleticism. I just don't, of course, you know, WWE just sticks him with a dumb gimmick, but
he was like a pimp with WWE, wasn't he, more or less, kind
yeah,
of
yeah yeah it was that
Superfly,
it was that, yeah, almost Huggy Bear type thing.
Yeah and that's like that's kind of as a kid how I knew him. And then when you started getting like ECW tapes, you was like, oh wait a minute, this guy's actually really good at wrestling. It's
awesome. Yeah,
it's funny how even 19, 18, 15 years ago, that comment of like, oh, they were in WWE and didn't think much of them. And then when you see something of them outside of WWE, you go, oh, this guy's incredible. It's funny how that continues over history and probably has been for a long time.
Yeah, that hasn't gone away. You know, that's amazing, but it hasn't gone away. It should have. And that's the thing, right? It should have gone away. It hasn't gone away.
Shifting gears, and this is something that I wanted to talk about before we get to the WWE side of things, is we had the G1 Finals press conference. They gave a trophy to Mo, but no one saw, so we can just deny that happened. But on the flip side, they had Ibushi talk, and this was the quote from Kota Ibushi on Wrestle Kingdom. Of course I accept and will use this contract, but I have one proposal. We have an event in the Tokyo Dome on January 4th and 5th, and I still have an attachment to the IWGP Intercontinental Champion. How about if I win the heavyweight title on January 4th and then challenge for the Intercontinental Champion on January 5th, whoever it may be? I will, of course, defend the right to challenge against Kenta and Evil, who beat me during the G1. That's it. That's my suggestion. What do you think of his suggestion?
It's awesome. I hadn't heard that, actually.
That is on the New Japan website. As a, they have an English translation and written out for what Ibushi said. So that could be a major moment. So just on the fly here, who did you have heading into night five to battle for the heavyweight and the IC title?
I think they're going to do that. Do you think they're actually going to do some sort of match where with the both belts on the line?
I mean, Ibushi has mentioned it, and that was Naito's goal with this whole tournament, that he had talked about wanting to have both belts. So I wonder if the seeds have slowly been planted for them to do that. I don't know how they get out of that, because you're obviously going to want to have two different champions with the IC and the IWGP heavyweight title, because both of them have prestige and meaning to them. But with this being the first time that they're trying to do two dome shows back-to-back, I could see them doing this.
Yeah, it's possible they could do it. I mean, it makes sense that Naito has the belt and is the one to get that chance, storyline-wise. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. I don't know. I mean, I don't know where they're going for on that night. I think we won't know till, I don't know, probably somewhere close to after the World Tag League probably ends.
Yeah.
We'll probably get a sense of where that second title match will be, or whatever it is, the second Tokyo Dome main event.
Josh, what do you think?
I think Mo kind of just summed it up best, to be honest. Don't need to really add much more.
That's kind of the end of our G1 conversation. It was amazing. I think as a listener, you're going to hear a tone shift where it goes from really excited to just kind of like, hey, it's there and it's happening. Yay. G1's great. Mo won again. I figure if I say it enough times, then
I won't have to, but I still will. Don't worry.
Believe me, I fully expect that to be continuing throughout the year until next G1, when I finally win. I'm gonna win. I'm gonna win. I'm gonna keep telling myself that.
I'll spot you guys like 15, 20 points, something easy.
Just to make it fair. Shifting gears, while Japan was super busy, we also had WWE have one of their main four pay-per-views with SummerSlam. We had NXT Toronto, and then we had Raw and SmackDown. Let's start with NXT. What did you guys think of that show and what that gave us?
I thought it was a good NXT. I think it was probably one of the, it was a little bit lower to the bottom. And it's not saying that it was a bad show. It's just compared to the other NXTs, it kind of goes a little lower. I thought it was a good show overall. I thought that, the two out of three falls match was good. I kind of have it last in the trilogy that those guys are having. My match of the night was absolutely EO and Candice LeRae. That was probably, until maybe what happened on SmackDown tonight, my favorite match of the week. I really loved that match, and EO has just really developed herself into a tremendous heel and really knows her persona. Candice finally got to go on a takeover and show what she can do as a talent, and then it was kind of embarrassing when you saw what Baszler and Mia Yim did. I don't think it's anything against Mia Yim. I just don't think her and Baszler could really gel together. The three-way match I thought was good, but it was just fine. And I thought the tag team match was really good. I think Street Profits have some of the best charisma right now, and they're really finding their way as a tag team and really getting the way to electrify the crowd. And you saw that in the vignettes on Monday as well. So I thought overall it was a good show. I just don't think it was one of the top takeovers that we've ever seen.
Yeah, it was solid, Yeah. I gave it a 7 out of 10.
It's about right.
Yeah, like a solid show, but I guess that's the problem with it. And how spoiled are we? That's just how the bar has been raised that high.
Exactly.
By takeovers, they've been so incredible, so consistently incredible, that a show that's this good just doesn't feel that good when in truth, it's better than most things we see out of under the WWE banner. And it's also, if you have been watching G1, that definitely hurts it too, because they couldn't match up to that, you know, in any way, shape, or form. And it's, maybe that's not fair, but it's true. It's just, it's not at that level, both in the ring or ability to create emotion. I wasn't as big on the Io Shirai and Candice LeRae as it seems everybody else is. I thought the moves were great and the athleticism was great, but it was the moment where Candice gave Io Shirai drove through the ropes, gave her this DDT to the floor, and 45 seconds later, Io Shirai wasn't selling a thing, was in the ring hitting her next big move, that they lost me, because I've been watching the G1 where people sell things, and I'm like, okay, it's all about the moves, and the moves are great, the athleticism's great, the storytelling to me was shit, so I was not at all a fan, but, you know, everybody's allowed to have their opinion, and you know, that's mine, and I'm definitely in the minority there.
It's a fair point.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed NXT. I always enjoy NXT. The Johnny and Adam Cole match was good. There's just little moments in there that was a little bit like, I don't know. A couple of the Canadian Destroyers, when they did them and how quickly they moved on to the next thing, it was kind of like, I don't know. This kind of, I don't know, the flow just didn't feel quite right. But even still, that's a quality match that they had. If this was on the main roster, everyone would be losing their minds, because this would have been amazing and unheard of on the main roster. Ultimately, I think from that, I don't believe we saw Johnny on Raw or SmackDown. We'll have to keep an eye out and see if he pops up on 205 Live. But if this is it appeared like it was Johnny's curtain call for NXT, and I just don't think in NXT, depending on how FS1 goes and if Vince gets his grubby paws on it, I just don't think we'll ever see a wrestler have a run that Johnny had, where he constantly was putting on quality matches, and there was that streak there when he was a singles competitor that was just amazing, starting with Andrade and just working his way all the way back down to Adam Cole. It just
probably first third of the year, I think he was Wrestler of the Year. I don't anymore. The first third of the year, I thought Gargano was the man.
He just, it's such a shame, because you should be really hyped. Like, this guy should have all the momentum in the world heading into the main roster. And just as fans, you're sitting there going, well, they're going to screw it up, and Johnny's not going to be able to do what what makes Johnny special and makes Johnny so great. In this podcast, we've gotten to at least see two moments with Johnny Gargano. Me and Josh got to see DIY versus The Revival in 2 out of 3 Falls in Toronto, and I got to see Johnny and Cole in 2 out of 3 Falls in New York. To see that, like, I feel like there's more of a connection with Gargano just based on what he was able to do, and I just don't foresee it happening on the main roster, because I don't think they'll book Johnny the way he was booked in NXT.
I gotta say, I'm not 100% sure he's coming up. If he's coming up, why do you protect him in that finish so much, where they both go off together? It's essentially a tie, and just Cole just happens to land with his arm on top of him.
That is like true.
That's why I'm not as convinced that he's going after the main roster.
Do you think he's just taking some time? Because Hunter had said that there were some injuries that he had.
Well, yeah. I mean, how can there not be?
Yeah.
Like, so, I don't know. I just that's not a finish that you put on for somebody that you're not protecting.
So now now moving forward, we can look at, because the next takeover will be the night before Survivor Series, and it'll be War Games.
Tapings are tomorrow, Joel?
I don't believe so. I can check, but I don't believe tapings are
tomorrow. Next week?
I think they may be next week.
Yeah, right? I think it's next week, because they tape a little bit at that show, like pre-show stuff, and before that starts. So that gives them enough to a week buffer, basically.
Well, I will say this, and this is a point that I had heard that they were talking about on post-wrestling, and Meltzer thought about it a little bit as well, with this idea of this FS1 show is happening. Like, it's the worst kept secret in professional wrestling. It's going to be a 2-hour show on FS1, probably coming in November. And that's a reason that the Street Profits have been on Raw, is to get their faces out there to be part of the launch. It's kind of hard to imagine NXT not having Johnny as part of the FS1 show. And you already have, you know, you have a talented roster of guys who even had takeovers, like Keith Lee, like whatever Punishment Martinez is. I can't remember my favorite wrestler from Japan right now, because it's been a long day. Kushida, thank you. And an unbelievably loaded women's division that Chelsea Green and Deonna Purrazzi have a group there starting to build up right now. And I think that's going to be a really big deal as we go on. I just can't imagine with Johnny that he's not going to be used on that FS1 show.
No, I think you're totally right. Like, it just doesn't feel to me like he's going main roster. And it's the strangest thing about NXT right now is almost everybody who's successful on NXT, the place to put them would be 205 Live, and 205 Live is death. So, because that's the style and that's where they would be used best, and the size they are for almost all of them. So mm-hmm. it's a weird thing.
Well, and it's weird because you have a thing in NXT right now where NXT is still a great product, don't get me wrong, but they're in a weird place right now, right? I don't really like how they use Matt Riddle in the show. I think I like Killian Dane, and I know some people were mad that Killian Dane is getting the spot versus Matt Riddle. Matt Riddle is maybe the most talented person on your roster, aside Adam Cole and Gargano, whatever you want. But Matt Riddle should not be kind of having this street fight with Killian Dane. I'd almost would have done with Matt Riddle what you did with Dream a few takeovers ago, when he just, you know, Dream kind of came out of the car and he's like, Dream is here. Maybe show Riddle in the crowd or something. I don't know, but he's too talented to not use. And I mean, there's a lot of guys like that, right? Like Kushida. Was his big signing, has not done a takeover yet. I thought for sure he was going to do Takeover Toronto. It's one of the reasons when I didn't go to Takeover Toronto, I was like, I don't really get to see Kushida. And not having Keith Lee either is really disheartening. But there's so much spots.
Especially since Kushida trained with Scott D'Amore in Canada.
Yeah.
Like so he's got that Canadian connection. Yeah. So that to me was why I was certain that he was going to be on the show. But, you know, obviously it didn't happen. The thing about Riddle is I think they did that already, where his very first takeover was him coming out with not having a match, and then Cassius Ohno came out and he beat him right in like 5 seconds. So I think you don't want to repeat that with him. So that's kind of a, you know, I didn't mind the Killian Dane brawl. I just minded the spot at the end where they took that was just looked terrible when they took that security guard who's obviously standing there. And he, like, why did he clothesline him and bring him over? Like, it made no sense. The guy's standing there. He takes that bump. There's no reason for that bump for him. There's no reason for Dane to take him out. There's no, like, you know, and that's probably the thing about this takeover, was it almost like they tried a little bit too hard consistently.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
I didn't mind the Killian Dane Riddle. I think that sets up for the next takeover, which will be Dane and Riddle, and then Riddle move, because I do think partially that Riddle's in a little bit of hot water with everything that he said about Goldberg, Chris Jericho, yeah. Booker T. I think that there is a little bit of that. So that's,
what did he say about Booker? That one's new to me.
Pardon?
The Booker one's new. I've heard about the Jericho one and the Goldberg one, but now he says something about Booker.
I think he just went on a tirade about WCW legends.
Mm, and just, yeah, he did.
Yeah, so it kind of, and I mean, Riddle tweeted out that there was a bag that was sitting in Riddle's locker, which, what did it say? It basically said it was from Goldberg, and it said, I'm not your bro.
Yeah.
So it begs the question now, I was going to ask you guys, do you think we would ever see Riddle versus Goldberg?
No.
No?
Okay. Yeah, the more I thought about it, no, I think Bill just wanted this Dolph match to kind of not have the stink of that Taker match to be the last match. I think Bill's done. I know he's going to be on the SmackDown first episode on Fox, so maybe if there's ever going to set up anything last for Bill, maybe it's on that, but I think Bill's just done.
I don't think he's done, but he'll be used like he was against Ziggler from now on. It'll be, yeah, exactly. I enjoyed that segment.
If only they could do that in 2003, though, Mo. took them how many years? Almost 20 years to figure out how to use Goldberg?
Well, the fact they figured out at all is the bigger surprise, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I
you got to see
I
him
think
figure
he'll
it
be
out.
Around. Yeah. What was I going to say about the thing about Riddle is, like, he's such a dick, right? Mm-hmm. And yet, that's almost what makes him so charismatic and likable. It's a weird thing. So, I mean, make no doubt about it. They're struggling, even with his incredible charisma and everything, to figure out how to use him, even in NXT. Can you imagine how much they would struggle to use this guy, the modern-day RVD, in the main roster? Like, it's frightening to me.
It's going to be interesting.
Speaking of the SmackDown, the 20th anniversary show to kick it off, which I'm sure we'll do, I'm thinking about 4.5 million. Mm-hmm. I'm expecting a very big crowd audience, you know, which will last
a big fall.
Yeah, about 30% fall from there, and then another 20%, and then blah blah blah, you know, until it's down to where to the 2.4 million, 2.2 million range, which will be disappointing to Fox, I'm sure. But mm-hmm. my question for you two is, out of 100. Likelihood The Rock is on that show.
50-50?
Yeah.
That's 500-500 is what you're saying. I think it's got to be higher. Like, I
don't know how you do it. I just saw a comment today. Kurt put it on his Twitter, that picture today. It's the first time I've seen that graphic of the 20th anniversary of the call. Have you guys seen the graphic?
No.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, and all people said underneath it is, if The Rock's not there, this is a waste of time.
Absolutely. I think they're going to move heaven and earth.
It's so,
you know, I think he's going to want to be there, but can he be? I mean, I know it's not easy, but, like, if he doesn't show up, it's going to look awful.
The legends that are listed in the graphic are Taker, Flair, Goldberg, Lawler, Trish, Hogan, Sting, Foley, Mark
Henry.
When you
Henry, think of SmackDown,
Lita,
you think
Booker.
Of Hogan.
Well, that's where he had the infamous, the right gay at the right time. It's a legendary promo. Then you have Sting, Foley, Mark Henry, Lita, Kurt, Booker.
And that's also where we last saw Mr. America. Maybe he'll show up.
Oh, I would be so thrilled.
No, I mean, I think it's going to be a surprise. I think that's a mistake. I mean, obviously, if you have The Rock, you should advertise him. But I think it would be a surprise appearance.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things where we have seen it. I mean, but it's been so damn long since we've seen
it. Call him via Skype.
We have seen. Oh, yeah. That's a wonderful idea. We saw how great that works out this week. No, I just think it's one of those things where it's like, okay, he shows up, he does a 15-minute promo, he's on a plane and out of there. Like it's, you know, like, I don't know. I suspect they'll make it work. I suspect.
What city is it in?
I don't recall.
Staples Center.
Oh, it's in L.A. Okay, well, yeah, I would, I mean, yeah, you have to have, I mean, the legends they have there, out of that, I mean, look, there's been the suspicion about Sting and Taker for Saudi. Maybe they're gonna set that up there. who knows?
We learn our lessons well.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, Goldberg was booked correctly and looked great, and Taker in that tag match at Extreme Rules was probably the best I've seen Taker. You and I were saying, what, Joel, like 2 to 3 years that tag match? The Taker looked great. And I'm like, good, stop. I don't need to see Taker again. That's how I want to remember him. He was tremendous in that match. And I just don't need to see it again.
They will not. The last image, almost for certain, will be poor.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
I mean, they definitely clinched the worst match of the year. I mean, I'm sure someone can do something else to make it worse. But Goldberg and Taker, to me, has clinched the worst match of the year. Yeah.
Worst match of the decade?
Yeah. There was the one match in TNA with that Survivor chick.
Yeah, Jenna Marosca.
Yeah, that was bad. Yeah. Against Charmel, right?
Yes, Charmel.
That was maybe the worst match I've ever seen. That was bad.
Oof. But you know what? For pure entertainment, I'd probably rather watch that one.
This is true. So bad it's good. Way.
It's so bad it's good, and you had no expectations for it to be good.
Right. Whereas, this was almost like that Trish and JBL tag match bad.
All right, let's
SummerSlam. SummerSlam. We've talked about it. What do we think of SummerSlam?
I thought it was, you know, not a bad, I thought it was like a thumbs in the middle show. I thought, you know, the title change was kind of surprising to me. I didn't think Seth was going to win because I, like I've been saying to you, I thought all for a while now that Roman was going to win the Rumble and face Brock again. So maybe we're not getting that. Who knows? Again, I to me, my match of the show was a women's match. I really liked Trish and Charlotte. I thought that was a really surprise. I was a little bit surprised how good Trish still was in the match, and she says she's officially done. We'll see what it's like. Wrestling retirements never last. I mean, this is Trish's, what, third retirement now? But she said she's done and wants to be a mom now. And if that's the case, I think she went out great. I think her and Charlotte did a great job. And I mean, the thing is, and I'll let you completely take over the show because I know you're the most ecstatic for it. The main takeaway from all of SummerSlam, yes, the Goldberg thing was booked correctly. Trish looked good. The Randy and Kofi match was booked terribly at the end, and much like you pointed out, Mo said, like Joe and AJ last year. But the takeaway is Bray Wyatt.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I absolutely – everything about the entrance, the presentation, I thought that there's Finn got a little too much offense – but I still, I didn't like the next snap. That was one of the things that I was a little bit, man, I saw it and I was like, yeah, that's not.
But you know how he got offense? I watched his match back. He kind of has that part where he's like holding his head. And I think that's him struggling to be the Fiend versus Bray Wyatt. And when he becomes Bray Wyatt again, that's when Finn's getting more offense. That's when he tries Sister Abigail, which doesn't work anymore because Bray Wyatt doesn't work in the ring. The Fiend works in the ring.
I'm still not 100% sold on it, but how he left the ring was great. The music, that headless lantern of Bray Wyatt was amazing. I love that, and I hope they don't remove that. I hope the next time we see the Fiend with a lantern, it's Finn's head, because that's just – that's – bodies and people that the Fiend is collecting, and I'd love to see something like that. I know it'd be a really creepy visual, but I just think that would be something that just adds another layer to it. We didn't see any Firefly Funhouse, though we did see that the Firefly Funhouse box set that they released with stickers and some pictures and a Fiend shirt all sold out. The big takeaway from all this is how quickly will WWE screw this up? This is something different. This is something unique. This is something that it feels like you watch WWE television and then you see this and doesn't quite jive because you're like, this shouldn't be the – this isn't something WWE would do. You're waiting for the other shoe to drop with this. And, I mean, commentary already was kind of meh on this whole thing. I wasn't totally happy with how commentary handled it. But
is it? Could it be?
Oh, God. I thought all in all, with the positives and the negatives, I thought this was a home run for WWE. I thought this was the perfect crowd reaction for this. And now we're just waiting for them to screw it up.
So overall, I gave SummerSlam a 5.5 out of 10. Right. I think there's three good things. I like the Goldberg thing. I like the Bray thing. And the final match overachieved. And you went out on a good note. Between that, there was a lot of average and a couple things that were horrendous. So it's, I mean, certainly it's like, again, it's, what are you comparing it to? I'm comparing it to G1, and that hurts it. That hurts it a lot. The thing about the Bray thing is that's different than anything in New Japan or WWE. Like, that's what makes it great. It feels completely fresh and new. What it actually reminds me of is in 1996 when the Goldust originally showed up. And there was a point in the match where in his first match, which I think, can't remember if it was Bam Bam Bigelow or Savio Vega. One of the two of them is his debut match. But he does, you know, there's a point where the crowd is almost eerily quiet, and there's a point where, but in a good way, and where the announcer says, I've never seen anything like this. you know, I think it was Ross. It's just, it might have been Vince. It's just like, I've never seen anything like this. Just kind of quietly. And there was a point where the announcer said that during this too. And it's true. Like it feels so fresh. So yeah, it's great. And as far as screwing it up, I don't even know about screwing it up so much. I know we don't trust them, and deservedly so. But to me, it's almost like, I just don't know, how do you keep it hot? How do you keep it fresh? It's new. That's why it's fresh. When I've seen it 10 times, 20 times, 100 times, how is it still fresh?
Like Nakamura's entrance, right? Or Bobby Roode's entrance. It was such a big deal. And then Robert Roode comes down to Glorious last night. It's like, oh yeah, cool. Or Nakamura, I remember watching the kickoff at Extreme Rules, and he came down. It's like, oh, remember when this was a really, really big deal?
It was a big deal, yeah.
And now it's like,
even
oh, cool.
Kane, right? The first time, Kane at first, the first, you know, and he petered out quickly. And it's like, how do you keep from petering this out? Like, where do you go with him? Who do you feud him against? Because the problem with a character like him is he's great as long as he's undefeatable. As soon as he loses once, the mystique is gone. So you can't beat him. On the other hand, you can't have him win forever. And especially if you set him up against the demon, you know, as much as that seems like a money matchup, what makes them both work is that you don't, neither one loses. So I don't know. That's my big thing with him. I just, the first time we saw this so many times, the first time you build up this guy and he's something, as soon as they lose, you just can't keep that mystique. And, but they have to lose. They have to. So I just don't know where you go with it. But that said, Bray Wyatt is this guy ever talented? Like, I know how much of the creativity of this has come from him. And geez, he is an extremely talented man. Don't you wish he was just booking the whole company?
I mean, he saved his job. He was going to get fired, apparently. He was very close to getting fired between the Wyatt character floundering and then the stuff he had with JoJo. He was close to getting fired, and he saved his own job from his beautiful mind palace. So good on him.
The one thing that it's interesting is we talk about the other shoe dropping with this, whether it's just him losing, poor booking. I know a lot of people were upset, but I'm glad that we didn't see any Firefly Funhouses this week. Everything was quiet. It almost creates that desire for more. You want to see it. You want more from this guy. You want another version of Firefly Funhouse. And I imagine next week we'll probably get one. But even if we don't get one, if it becomes where he goes away for a couple weeks and then we have that Firefly Funhouse, then it's a little bit of like, oh yeah, this thing is we finally get to see what the next installment is for where he's going. I don't know who he feuds with next. That's a huge part of this, is trying to figure out his next direction. And I just hope that Bray is vocal enough and has enough pushback and willing to fight to kind of know we gotta keep doing this in such a way. I think the Fiend only shows up on pay-per-views, and I think he only does a couple pay-per-views. I mean, you look at it, Baron Corbin has been gone since Extreme Rules, and now he's back for the King of the Ring. Rusev has been gone for quite a while, and I, based on Rusev's tweet, I would bet money that he's going to show up again. We had the Sasha finally return.
Yeah, we did.
I think sometimes you need to just disappear for a little bit. I'm not suggesting that for The Fiend and Bray Wyatt, but there's other people that don't have to be on shows all the time. We didn't see Roman and we didn't see Strowman on SummerSlam at all. And that, I don't think that hurt the show at all. That didn't make you go, oh, well, this show would have been perfect if Braun and Roman was on this show. I think you need to start really looking at your talent pool and spreading it out and making sure that you're not overexposing guys. And I think that's one of the best things you can do with The Fiend, is not overexposing him and having him at every pay-per-view. Ultimately, that's what will happen, and that will be one of the many death blows that this character will more than likely suffer. But as of right now, I'm pretty happy with what I got from Bray Wyatt. I wasn't sure what I was going to get, and the minute I saw that lantern, I was like, I am sold. This is just so different.
Well, The thing is, The Undertaker still feels special because you only see him wrestle a couple times a year and it is on pay-per-view. The Demon still feels special because he's never wrestled on Raw. So you do have to, if you're going to do this, you have to be smart about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, this guy's, he's going to be on the road. He's going to be working house shows. He's going to be, all this stuff hurts the brand. If they're smart, they just let him wrestle as the other character whenever it needs to be everywhere except for pay-per-views where the Fiend comes out. And you push, you do a, they have to, he gets it, obviously, as far as the dual personalities and the inner struggle. I don't think WWE creative gets it, and I don't think he has the pushback. If he had, I don't think we ever would have gone down that Sister Abigail route as far as we did before we were fortunate enough that injury forced that ever to happen.
Ask Matt Hardy if they get split personalities.
Yep.
Oh man, it's weird because we go from talking about Wrestle Kingdom 14 with a lot of excitement and a lot of anticipation for where things are going next. Even the Royal Quest and the Super J Cup is met with excitement. Everything with WWE you're met with, and even now NXT you're met with, well, this is all great and all, but eventually this could bottom out because of this, this, or this. I think that's one of the many problems that this company has, is it has a stink, it has a stigma.
Having said that, it was a really good week for them. Like, all four shows were great, I gotta say. Like, Roman and Buddy tonight, I know you guys haven't seen it, that may have been the match of the week. It was a phenomenal
Buddy
match.
Buddy Murphy's really good, but I gotta say, ratings last night for Raw, really strong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like 2.7 million, like that's way up.
Yeah, I think the King of the Ring next week, I think, is going to be a boost for them as well. I think that's a great addition. Me and Joel were kind of, you know, first time we've really talked about WWE in a positive way, like beforehand, be like, oh, this could be happening. This is exciting. So I will say, like, yes, Japan is killing it, and we'll see what AEW does with All Out. And, you know, we have our criticisms about WWE at times. I think we've got to give credit where credit's due is, they delivered a nice week in Toronto. They delivered a pretty quality week in Toronto, and I got to give them a little bit of props for that.
Well, I'll say I think unfortunately we're grading on a curve,
yeah,
and that we expect it to be poor.
Terrible. Yeah.
So the fact that it's decent makes it seem better than it is.
Of course.
So we're grading on a curve. That is unfortunate. But yeah, I mean, they're, you know, like I say, I'm surprised by the ratings, and they got a couple cool things.
Mm-hmm.
They got a couple cool things, but they have not shown an ability to
carry it,
sustain anything for years.
How surprised were you guys by the reaction that Seth got in that that match? Because I felt like when they showed Seth getting ready, he got booed. Then Brett showed up on screen, and that caused a cheer. And then I didn't feel like the crowd really turned on Seth at any point during that match.
No, they were ready to boo him. They were booing both guys during the introductions. It's just that he wrestled such a great babyface monster heel match. And he had a really good performance. It was a good match. That it was almost impossible to boo him, but it's coming. They were going to boo him, and it is coming. And they are going to boo Roman Reigns. It is coming. And, you know,
well, I mean, you look
by
at...
the way, we haven't even mentioned how great was it to see Edge.
The spear, Mo. What do you think about that?
Awesome. I know he shouldn't have been doing anything physical. I know.
I think everyone's waiting to listen. I can't remember. I think Pollock or Sean Ross said it's like, I don't think anyone has been waiting to hear the Edge and Christian podcast. It's already a great podcast. So much until this week.
Oh, yeah.
See what Edge is going to say about the spear and his spinal stenosis. And I know he's going to shut it down and be like, I'm not going to wrestle or anything like that. But people are going to wonder, like, I thought you couldn't do anything. Because even on the podcast, him and Christian are constantly asked, are you going to wrestle? Christian 100% can. He just doesn't want to be one of those has-been wrestlers that does a match. That's kind of been his point.
Oh, he can?
Yeah, he can. 100% can. He just doesn't want to be one of those guys that has been that is in the ring just to do it. He did the concussion thing that Paul Kariya and Brian did in the chambers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he's good. He can wrestle if he wants to. He just chooses not to. And as for Edge, he's like, I can't even do a spear. He said that multiple times on the podcast. So it's like, what's up, Edge? Just did a spear on a pretty big guy.
I
think the spear is one of the safer moves in reality because you don't really hit a guy, you know, and the guy takes the entire bump. So still,
I feel like
it's a surprise.
The bulk of his arm took the spear, and it just, but it was one of those things that was really risky because if Elias moved wrong and Edge jammed his head, you don't know how that plays out. So that was one of those moments. You had both Edge and Shibata do stuff that you're like, no, you're not supposed to be able to do this. This shouldn't be happening, yet it is. It's going to be very interesting to see what Edge says, but I think wrestling has... I don't want to see Edge wrestle. I think Edge went out, the retirement and everything, I just think it's done, and there's no point in going back and revisiting that. But that's just me.
No, we don't need to see him wrestle. I think that's definitely... We don't need to see him wrestle. You know? No. This was good. This was a surprise. That's what made it fun.
Yeah, I think, and I mean, there are some people saying like, oh, I'm surprised Edge got a bigger cheer than Trish did, with maybe this being Trish's last match and everything. Number one, I love Trish so much. Edge was a bigger star than she was.
And a also, surprise.
It's a surprise, exactly. So there's that. But I thought Trish, you know, got a nice send-off, and she got a nice reaction. I think KO's is bigger than hers also.
KO's KO, man.
Yep. He's really done a good job of... I don't think there's been a WWE superstar, all respect to Edge and Christian and all these guys, I don't think there's been a WWE superstar that's done a better job of embracing Canadian fans than KO has. Every time he comes to Canada now, it's a big deal. And I haven't seen that probably since the Hart Foundation, of it being a big deal that KO is in Canada.
Yeah, well, it is a big deal. I don't know if it's... Yeah, I'm trying to think of it. You're probably right. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody has... Yeah. Certainly Sami Zayn hasn't.
Yeah, I mean, when they go to Montreal, they're excited to see Sami. But, we'll see what... There's a house show out here in Calgary on September 20th. I'm not sure if I'll go or not, but maybe I'll get some free tickets. But I'm interested to see how he's embraced on that show as well. I'm sure it'll be... greatly embraced. I mean, the only reason I'd go to that house show right now is to see Ricochet, because I've never seen him live. So, yeah. Anything else, okay. Joel?
Sasha Banks.
Yes! So happy.
The second best return of the weekend, or second best angle of the weekend.
Oh, so good. Heel Sasha Banks, thank you so much. Just put it in my veins. I'm ready for this.
Just don't put a chair in her hand or she'll club Becky in the head again.
Yeah.
Did you see that, Mo?
I did not see that part, no.
There was a fan camera.
I do know this. She's not going to be booed for long.
No. Natty went in the ring and said, this is the anniversary of my father dying, and they chanted, thank you, Sasha.
I know.
Not a good look, Raptor fans. What was worse? Cheering for Kevin Durant,
Durant was worse, dude.
Or cheering for someone worse on the anniversary that their father died.
Because this one, they knew they were being manipulated by the WWE. That's why they were reacting. It wasn't anything against Natalya. It was that they know that they're being manipulated, and they found that in poor taste.
Yeah.
And so that's the stack. Yeah. But, yeah.
Durant's worse, I know. It's just two bad looks.
Well, I think the biggest, one of the most just groan-worthy things in that segment was the minute Sasha's music hit. Just how excited Cole and Renee got. And it was like...
I know. Idiots.
He tried to get every line in. He was like, oh my? Is it? Could it be? It was just like he had to get all his lines
in. But Vince is in his ear telling him that. Mm-hmm. That's Vince. Vince is the idiot. It was like the very, very, very first time that they did an NXT UK or UK show.
Yeah.
And Cole called and everyone was like, man, it was really good. You know what wasn't there?
Vince.
Vince McMahon.
And Hunter's already come out and said, had laughed about it, that he thinks that Vince is going to outlive them all. And more than likely, as punishment.
His mother's still alive?
As punishment to wrestling fans, Vince will probably outlive us all.
Well, I think his mother's still alive, so.
Yep,
so.
She's 90.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, Sasha Banks' return was good. It's going to be interesting to see that matchup between Becky. I can't see them giving Sasha the title. Then again, it is WWE, and they're weird, but I just think...
Depends on Ronda. Like, what? It depends what they're going to do with Ronda, really. Is Ronda going to face Becky at Mania? Is Ronda going to win the Rumble?
Is she going to be pregnant?
That's the thing. And that's why Joel and I were like, I'm not trying to get into someone's personal life. I just thought by now we maybe would have had a pregnant announcement. A little bit surprised by it. We've had, like, her making movies about tables or whatever. And I'm sure they're trying. I'm just surprised that we haven't heard a pregnancy announcement yet. But we'll see.
I'm trying so bad to not make a completely inappropriate joke. So, leave it at that.
Well, I'll change the subject here. Like Joel was saying, this arguably should have almost been a WrestleMania match between Sasha and Becky. Like, I don't know in the ranking of the NXT women's matches where the first Becky and Sasha match goes. I was trying to debate yesterday, but it's a top five. I don't know where it ranks. But it's in one of the earlier takeovers. It's a top five. That match was phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously not their first match, not even their first match on pay-per-view.
No.
You know, in main roster. But it'd be the first in a long time. First with the man character. I want to see
the being heel on the main.
Yeah, Sasha being heel. I want to see more than her being heel. I want to see an evolution of the character. Mm-hmm. That's what I got to see out of this.
She's got blue hair.
Yeah, okay, beyond that. She can't be the boss anymore. I need something different. That's what will make it work. You can't, mm-hmm. If you're the exact same character but with blue hair, it's not going to work. You're going to be a heel. You're going to be different. You're going to be new. You got to come in fresh with something different.
Like Io Shirai.
Yes. Yeah. See? Is that, or even Bray Wyatt, frankly. Yeah. You got to come in and give me something new. That otherwise, you will fail.
Got to keep reinventing yourself. But
Chris Jericho.
I think we've hit on everything. During the week, I can't think of this crazy.
Go watch Buddy and Roman. It's a good match. Really, really good match.
All right. Saw my PVR.
Yeah, I'll sit down and I'll watch it right now, and we'll see how that goes.
So you're telling me, I'm just glad to hear that they didn't bury Buddy Murphy, because the way he's being booked so far, I was worried that would be the case, and that's that would be stupid.
That was his first match ever on Raw and SmackDown, by the way, tonight.
Yeah. And you know what? That's the thing, right? You look at that King of the Ring, you're like, oh, that's a good match. Oh, that's a good match. Oh, that's a good match. They're going to get 3 minutes. It's going to suck.
The finals will be held at Night of Champions, so I wonder if they're going to let this breathe a little bit.
Yeah, let's see.
Who do you have in the final, really quickly?
Oh,
I
remember looking at the brackets and being really impressed, but I don't know.
Is the bracket See, that's out? The
thing, right? Like I said, we looked at it and you're like, really good match, really good match, really good match. I could see Ali being one of the finalists, but the problem is, what if Baron Corbin gets to the finals? And you know it's very possible, right? And then everything goes to hell.
Is the bracket out?
I don't believe so.
Maybe I was just salivating at the possibilities.
There's a list of who's in it.
The blocks. Maybe that's all it was. SmackDown and Raw blocks. I think the favorite is probably Drew to win it. But I mean, like you said, I wouldn't be shocked if Corbin. I think with the gimmick, I like the gimmick for Corbin. To be honest, I could see him doing something as the gimmick as King. Because I tried to look at. This is the best for a wrestling standpoint for a character to bring them up, and the best for who could use the King gimmick as well. Because it's a two-fold situation.
Heels work better with that King gimmick, definitely.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, I could very well see if it was Drew versus Ali in the finals, it makes sense, right?
Yeah. Poor Shelton. I'm glad that he's in it and gets some shine, but I don't think he'll get out of the first round.
Probably not, no.
No. All right. That it, Joel?
That's it. I think we've hit on everything, and I said I'm going to take a wrestling break, and God only knows I'm going to go watch more wrestling, so...
Yep. Hey, you're about to go watch Buddy Murphy versus Roman.
Yep. It never stops. It never stops. Well, Mo, again, congratulations on another year winning.
Where's my trophy that looks like a thumb?
Why a thumb?
Oh, explain it to him sometime, Joel.
All right. we had talked about getting
the C block. That's what David Finley got for winning the C block last year. Mm. A trophy that looks like the thumb, the mystical, not real C block.
Who won the C block this year?
Chase Owens, I believe.
Chase Owens. Okay, cool. We had talked about getting like a little briefcase to be the championship for each year. So maybe one day we'll finally get that and we'll have to put Mo's name on it twice.
Oh, it'll probably be more than twice, let's face it. All right, guys, I'm going to go have some food. You guys have a good night.
Okay, later, Mo. Thank you, Joel. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the One Fall podcast. And until next time, cheers and enjoy the day, people.